8 o'clock Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship station of the reigning 2018 Western Conference champion, expansion Vegas Golden Knights. That's a mouthful. We are streaming on the LV Sports Network, and we can be seen on Facebook Live. If you're listening for the first time, this is Out of Line, and we're here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9. I'm Brian Feldman. Directly in front of me, producer and Lotus Broadcasting sports radio personality Chris Magnum Chapman is here. Jose Vellante, who now has his own sports talk show called Sudden Death on the station just up the dial on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock. And also here, and last time when former UNLV quarterback and current UNLV football radio color commentator on ESPN Radio, Caleb Herring is in studio. I guess you know we'll be talking some Rebel football today. That's for damn sure. And you can follow this show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM. And on Facebook, it's Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. A ton of subjects available today to choose from. So pick one out and give us a call. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo, a great place to watch every game. Jose, what's on tap, man?
Well, we already know that former UNLV quarterback, running Rebel as well, Caleb Herring, is back in studio with us for the first time since last year at this time. You'll bet Caleb is going to be talking. You know what she's going to be talking about as well. Also joining us from the Las Vegas Motor Speedway is host of On Pit Road. Alan Michaels will be there getting us ready for today's South Point 400. Alan Snell was also at the Triple G Canelo fight last night, and he'll drop in with his LV Sports Biz Minutes to tell us exactly what he saw. And it's NFL Week 2, and we'll talk about it. We'll break it down, and we'll give you our picks this week and see what we have. That's What's on Tap, and What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you could earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID, and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
But he's hot because he's fly, right? Caleb Herring right to me. Did I just say that, man?
Did,
my
man.
God in heaven. Hey, welcome to a Sunday morning. What a weekend of sports in Las Vegas, man. These are the kind of weekends that you live for, that you dig on, waiting for. And, UNLV football yesterday. Canelo, Triple G part two, and there definitely will be a part three, that's for sure as well. And man, today you've got NASCAR, the first ever South Point 400. It is the start of the playoffs. Alan Michaels, not the Al Michaels. Whenever I say that, people think it's Al Michaels. No, yeah. It's Alan Michaels, and he does a show called On Pit Road. Really good, extremely knowledgeable with auto racing, and of course, NASCAR, man, coming down. Pretty cool, man. It's a cult following. If you've never been down to LVMS and seen a NASCAR race, it really is. It is like a cult following, like a Jimmy Buffett concert or probably like the Grateful Dead. I mean, people really go nuts for NASCAR. Country music, these are the most passionate fans and most loyal fans of anywhere. You might criticize them, but they just truly are. They're nuts, like soccer fans or football fans,
like
as they call it. But real quick, Caleb Herring, of course, joining. Welcome to the show, man. It's been a little bit.
Oh, it's been a while, man. It's good to be back, though. Yeah, always fun.
You know, you listen to this guy doing the games, and Mags does, of course, the pregame show with Tyler Bischoff. It's a good job, and they set everything up. And Caleb, during the game, what I really like about him is Caleb just tells it like it is. And, you know, Russ Langer's like your conservative guy, paints really nice pictures, and is a great play-by-play guy. Really is. If you haven't heard him on the 51s for years and years, does an exceptional job, but he's a conservative guy, and it's always Mr. Positive, finding that silver lining. Caleb's like, the hell with the silver lining, man. Here's the deal. Why does this team look like a different team coming out of the locker room every damn game, Caleb? It is a second-half issue. It has been for years, and again, you look at yesterday's game, you see the gaudy score. They scored 44 points.
Right.
It looks good. 34 were scored in the first half, and if the game was only the second half, they would have lost to Prairie View A&M yesterday.
You know what? It was one of those things where you thought they nipped that problem in the butt. Because against USC, they came out in the third quarter and looked good. I mean, at least defensively. And then again against UTEP, they came out in the second half and they looked good. So it was like, oh, maybe they turned a corner and things have changed. But for whatever reason, that third quarter last night was just sloppy. And Coach Sanchez talked about it before halftime that the team just looked sloppy. And they pretty much followed up that remark with a sloppy third quarter. So those kinds of quarters and halves against, you know, decent or better competition are going to cost you later on. I think Coach Sanchez knows that. The players know that. The good thing about it is those sloppy second halves last season or in the past would have led to losses. And there have been a lesson you have to learn while taking an L too. But this season they were able to come out with a win after a terrible second half. Thankfully, they were up so big after the first half. But again, terrible second half. They got some work to do before they get into conference play.
You know what he just said? That's never a good thing. Sloppy second. Didn't he just say a sloppy? I mean, that is sloppy absolutely. Yeah. There's never.
Call me on that,
there
huh?
is absolutely no way you can ever put a good spin on that.
Not at
you
all.
Just
you
can't.
You walk right into that.
I mean, you did. Foot in mouth, bite down hard, and you lose two of your toes.
There's booby traps but, everywhere.
You know,
going
but
back to the goon.
I mean, it is. You know, you can say it is an age-old problem with them. It's something that they need to nip in the bud, something they need to get rid of. But the bottom line, when you talk about a poor performance in a second half on a consistent basis, it is a coaching issue. There's no other way to look at it. I'm going to tell you this first and foremost, and I'm not blowing smoke up anybody's ass. I like Tony Sanchez a great deal. I do. I think the players like him. I think he comes with passion, and he comes with reality. And I like that about the guy. But this has been a second half problem. And the bottom line, you can do that against Prairie View A&M. Even New Mexico, who gave Wisconsin fits for a minute, is going to be a problem for this team if you cannot play in the second half. First of all, I do want to say Blazin' is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. They've got two happy hours every day. They are America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And, hey, we were there last week. I hate admitting that. I had to watch that Lions-Jets game there. But
we
were all up there.
What was wrong with that?
Every Monday night we are up there giving away replica jerseys. Cool things, and come on down, join us. We will be there tomorrow night. I'll be in a much better mood, I promise you that.
But yeah, the Lions will be getting their ass kicked by the Jets.
How do you know that?
But the Lions will be 0-2 by then, though. So.
All right, here we go again. I gotta get the hell away from this. But what was Blazin', and why I did, because it's like, well, you said Blazin', like, what's hot? And you talk about, you know, you're sitting here negativity about UNLV. That's not it. Armani Rogers scored 4 TDs on the ground yesterday. This guy can run the football. He is lanky. Caleb called attention to this last night during the game, that when he first arrived at UNLV, he drew comparisons to Cam Newton based on his body configuration and his body type. And I agree with that assessment. I mean, he is a big, imposing character that has a lot of athleticism, can run the ball, and we'll get a look-see at the next level, depending on what that look-see turns into. I think Lex Thomas is going to get a look-see at the next level. So we'll see what those things turn into. But what more can Armani Rogers and that offense do? Because, Caleb, is it a mindset all of a sudden you just decide, hey, let's go to sleep in the second half. We'll score 34 points in the first half and bye-bye in the second?
I mean, this last week, I think there was a mix of kind of getting comfortable. I don't know if UNLV has ever been in a position where they've dominated like that in the first half, and we talked about it a little bit on the broadcast, holding up a goose egg defensively. I can't remember the last time UNLV pitched a shutout. So it was an awkward position for them to be in. Also, they had a major injury to one of their teammates. So there's always going to be a lull like during those type of situations. But, I mean, for whatever reason, the offense also sputters. The defense sprung a leak and just gave up a ridiculous amount of points, which I don't think they should. But Prairie View is a good offense, and they put up a lot of points throughout their season. They took Rice down to the wire in the fourth quarter.
They got a good quarterback.
They have a good quarterback.
Their running back's pretty good, too.
They have had a decent quarterback.
They have the number one running back in the FCS right now, Tucker, and he was held to under 100 yards. So that's
62 yards.
It's not like they played a terrible game. It's just that for a quarter, they didn't look like they were supposed to. I think they got it together in the fourth, obviously, put up another set of points, and and pitched a shutout for the fourth quarter. But, I mean, there's learning experiences to be had. No doubt the Rebel product on the field is not perfect. They're not where they want to be. I think they're going in the right direction where we can be talking about this sloppy, ugly game. Not sloppy seconds. I'm not going to say it again after I say
oh,
it again.
Come on, one more time. Put your foot in it.
No, so it's not like they're learning these lessons in losses anymore. And I think you can hang your hat on that. They have a chance to go into conference play with a 3-1 record. And I think that was ideal. No matter how you get there, that was the situation that if you look at the schedule before the season, you say that's probably where they'll be. And here they are.
They are
one game away from
that. Who we thought they were.
Well, the thing was last night, too, and I don't think we've mentioned it, but they played very vanilla on offense. UNLV really...
It was a watered-down playbook.
Yeah,
and
they
ran the same play about a dozen
Lex
times
Thomas
in the first
up
half.
The middle
right,
a bunch was, of times. They didn't try to spring it to the outside.
It was a conservative game to get nobody hurt.
They had a walk-on, and they ended up getting a lot of people hurt, actually.
Yeah,
but they had a walk-on make his first start at center.
At center.
And they had the backup left guard was in just to start the game, and then another
Singer
guard went out.
Singer
had to come in anyway
and play. Center?
True freshman walk on.
He's from Vegas.
He's from Vegas. He's a Vegas local. His dad played also and went on and had a good NFL career. So,
but
the guy was his first start as a true freshman walk on. So it's like,
and there were some issues there. You could see that there,
yeah, but no doubt.
You know, the thing was, UNLV played the game they needed to play. They didn't open up the playbook. They didn't need to open up the playbook. We didn't see Tylee Collins getting involved. We didn't really see Brendan Presley getting involved on the sweeps and the reverses and things like that. Look, Lex Thomas carried the ball 30 times. Armani Rogers ran the ball well. They had 4 sacks on the defensive side. A couple drop passes. The one interception, the receiver slipped. I mean, the reality is, I think if UNLV had to play better, they would have because they could have. But Prairie View spotted them basically 20 points.
They did. But, Caleb, I want to ask you, said the last pitch time they pitched a shutout. In the second half of probably the most memorable game of your career against Central Michigan. Mm. And I'll never forget that game, watching it at halftime. You want to talk about, look at the smile right
hey,
now.
Hey, listen.
It was from here to here on this guy.
Hey, no one saw that smile. Cut that camera off.
Bobby Hauck is watching.
Let me tell you something. In the locker room after that game, let me tell you, Central Michigan was beating the crap out of UNLV here at Sam Boyd Stadium. It was almost embarrassing.
It was embarrassing. It wasn't
without question. 21-3, was that the halftime score, I think? Something
21
like that.
Nothing, 21-0. We were shut out, I think.
Okay, didn't even remember. Have a field goal. And I know, but the second half, the defense did step up.
They did. But didn't pitch a shutout for the full game. But yeah, that second half, they were phenomenal. And I just couldn't remember a time where UNLV pitched a shutout for an entire game. I know I'd never been a part of one.
I don't know that God's been a part of one. So, I mean, we're talking about.
I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
Obviously, we know what Armani Rogers could do on the ground.
Yeah.
But doesn't he have to get a little bit better with the arm?
You know what? The thing about Armani, I've been watching him, and he's at the point now. A lot of people talk about how he hasn't grown and he still misses some incomplete. The thing about Armani this year, he throws it to the right person. I haven't seen him make the wrong decision too many times. Now, he has, of course, a couple of times, but he's at least making the right reads, going through the right progression, and he looks comfortable in the pocket. Right now, I think it's a matter of his strong arm has always been his strong point. He throws the ball hard. He throws a really hard ball. At times, he has a little bit of trouble controlling it. He's throwing it to the right guy, but he's trying to, you know, throw it 100 miles an hour. Sometimes it's just about pitch and catch out there, making it easy. But at least I'm saying he's grown in the aspect that he's throwing it to the right guy a high percentage of the time. It's just a matter of calming his arm down and getting accurate. Most of his incomplete passes are overthrows. If it's going too high, too tall over the guy's head, or just over everybody's head. So he's a work in progress. You got to remember, he's a sophomore right now. At most programs, and even in UNLV, you don't get a start at quarterback until your junior or senior year because you've been sitting on the bench behind somebody else.
He's technically a junior.
Junior, but he redshirted. And, you know, so he's got, after this year, 2 more years. So we're seeing him go through some of the growing pains that most guys go through in practice where they're not seen by the public eye. So he's going through that in front of us to see, so we can critique and criticize him as much as we want to. So it's a work in progress, and he knows that. He's willing to do the work, but he's come a long way since he started last year. And I think that progress should be noted. But yeah, he does have a lot of work to do.
Well, it's funny on the broadcast when you hear them Caleb talking about Armani Rogers, and I swear the quarterbacks, it's great. You can tell current quarterbacks and ex quarterback. All he does is he cannot stop talking about the offensive line. Well, you know, you got to give credit to the guys up front.
You got
to
feed them.
Are you still buying watches for UNLV's offensive line at this point?
I would never. Yeah, I mean, geez, when your offensive line keeps you clean for a game, you got to do something like buy them a cake,
right?
Like, you know, like, well, so you got to reward the guys, take them out to dinner. Like, if that's your offensive line and you come out of the game clean, you should you know,
a reward
hat
should
to
be coming.
They need some recognition every
should
now
be
then.
A good Christmas.
Now
too.
This is just my assessment from watching the first couple games. I know he took a bad penalty yesterday, Justin Polo, but Sundays for this guy, because this kid got a Sunday potential. He is a big boy. I watch Lex run behind his butt a lot.
A lot of guys on the offensive line may get there for UNLV. It's a matter of if they get a shot. I think, first of all, for a lot of college
Who's got the best shot on that offensive line?
I think he probably has the best shot. They do run a lot of plays behind him, and for good reason. He does a great job. But UNLV's offensive line up front, they've got a collection of guys that have potential. And if they get a shot somewhere, yeah, who knows? I mean, it's a matter of getting
on. Jacobson's been playing for a while. I mean, he's a big boy.
They've been around. Yeah. So it's
an experience unit.
It's great to have an experienced unit at offensive line.
And
you
have some depth.
A dominant running game for the past 4 years. People at the next level are taking note of that and saying, well, something's going right if there's three running backs and they're all going over 100 yards all the time. Somebody on the offensive line must be doing something, so they'll get recognized.
I agree with you. In the defense, well, we'll take a break in a second, but the defense, on the defensive side, Chris and I and Jose, we've talked about a lot in here. If Dalton Baker continues to be the leading tackler on this team, it doesn't mean for good things down the road. The one thing I did want to ask in talking about Dalton Baker is one of the team's captains. I noticed even in the first home game against UTEP, and I think even one series against USC, Sanchez like pulls him. Like, is he getting pulled because he's making a mistake? He's completely healthy, and I see him off the sidelines. I don't know what that is, but I've seen it in almost every game. He'll miss a tackle or two, and next thing you know, he's on the sidelines the next series. Well, Sanchez does with a lot of players?
I think at this point, it's Sanchez trying to install some sort of rotation. I don't know if it's necessarily mistake oriented. Like, he makes a mistake and he comes out. I think he's trying to limit the snaps. I think last week he held most of the players under 40 or 50 snaps. I think Dalton ended up having the most snaps for a starter. So, but Dalton's, I mean, he's the leading tackler because of the schemes that Tim Skipper has installed, where there's a lot of man-free coverage, and Dalton Baker ends up being the alley defender as a safety. And I think they trust him in that situation. I don't think they trust him as much in coverage, and I think he's been used as a part of their run defense. So that may be why he's up there in tackles for the team. But
he's out there in tackles because they're constantly getting to the second level of the defense.
No, I mean, I can't say that necessarily. They've been doing a good job on defense
for the most part this year. I agree.
Dalton's a workhorse, and I think that's one of the things that Coach Sanchez will always say about Dalton. He practices hard. He'll take the reps, he'll do whatever he's had to do. Sometimes he ends up in the wrong place, and like you said, he'll miss some tackles in the open field, and it'll look bad. And I think Coach Sanchez wants him to work on that, and so he's available on the field. But he's been a part of their run defense, and he's not, I don't think, as good as the other defensive backs in coverage. So that's probably why he'll be sticking his nose in on the run game and making more tackles.
He definitely hits hard. I mean, for sure. And I think another thing with UNLV that Coach Sanchez would like is maybe Evan Pantel's going to a sports therapist or something.
And it wasn't just Pantel's, because Gutierrez had
but
a
kick.
But
that was a 49-yarder.
His was blocked,
but it was still from 49 yards. But it was kicking blocked. It on a lower trajectory.
The procedure was slow. It was a little slow.
Having
been a holder in my career, the procedure part of that snap hold was a little bit slow.
To
his credit.
I was listening on the radio. They didn't explain that well enough. That's
he was kicking with the wind that was blowing about 30 miles an hour at the time. So telling me it's a 49-yard field goal, irrelevant to me. It was blocked.
Okay, I understand.
The special teams is something that
Pantel's missed a PAT, first one he's missed.
He missed a PAT,
and he missed a field goal. He should have missed two field goals.
Well, yeah.
One was an offsider, he would have missed two.
And Brandon Presley muffed the punt.
Yeah, he did.
And he should have called
for
a catch.
Didn't fair catch.
He did.
He must have been watching the North Texas Arkansas game yesterday.
Taking us to break, Caleb. Next week, a lot of people have this penciled in as a loss. Arkansas State, if you haven't heard about this team, why don't you do a little due diligence? They are good. And it's on the road. Can UNLV beat them? Honestly, man, don't give me a homer. Look, I don't want to start feeling that next
time.
Right,
I'm not a homer at all, but I think they can win the game. It's a matter of them coming out and play. Which Rebel team's going to play? Is third quarter UNLV going to come out? Like Prairie View third quarter? No, they're not going to win if they put that on the field. If they have a good performance, if they come out and play the way they're supposed to, the way they played, for instance, against USC for three quarters, they can win the game. There's no reason that UNLV should look at Arkansas State and feel like they're an underdog for whatever reason. They should be able to win the game, and that's the expectation. I expect them to win. 3-1, I'd be a little bit disappointed if that wasn't the record coming out of Arkansas State. So we'll see. I mean, Arkansas State is a good team, so I don't want to discredit them at all, but UNLV has two wins in a row here, and there's no reason that they shouldn't be looking to come out of Arkansas State with a win.
I agree with you. They should be 3-1 after that game.
I said Arkansas State, the only way, in my opinion, the only way they beat Arkansas State is the strength of their team, which is their skill positions on the offensive side of the ball, are going to have to play great. Armani's going to have a great game. Lexington Thomas and the other backs are going to have to open it up for him so he can work the passing game. And the receivers are going to have to catch the football on a consistent basis. All those things happen. They can maybe match them score for score, and they can win the game. And that's the way I think they'll win it.
I'm going to flip it. It's all on the defense.
Yeah,
the defense is going to give up a lot of points.
I don't think there's any reason
for it to
be
a lot of points.
Offense has scored 40. Okay. They're averaging what, 40 some points? But yeah.
The best defense in this game is going to be a good offense.
Well,
you got to
throw out the game against Alabama, because you can't take anything about Arkansas State from that going. But they did beat Tulsa yesterday on the road. And the thing with them is, UNLV can move the ball on anybody. I'm convinced.
100%.
I'm convinced they'll run the ball on whoever they play the rest of the season. Look, they ran for 300 yards against USC. They'll be able to run
against these guys.
Their
best defense is going to be a good offense. That's exactly what I just said.
The defense, despite the fact that they did have that lull in the third quarter yesterday, look, they had four sacks. They had a bunch of turnovers. There was only one big play.
I'm just going to say this going to break. I can't do this. Prairie View A&M. Listen, this is out of line. Fox Sports Radio. We are going to come back on the other side. We'll have Alan Michaels from, I hope he's good. He should be calling in any minute now if he hasn't yet, calling in from the track LVMS out there for the South Point 400. Alan Snell was last night at the Canelo Alvarez Triple G fight, and he's going to call and tell us his viewpoint and his vantage point and his perspective on that. And we definitely are going to talk some NFL, man. Got to talk some NFL week two coming up. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio. We'll be right back. Is the number to call. Fox Sports Radio. This is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman. I am joined in studio today by former UNLV quarterback, current color commentator on ESPN Radio, the sports leader over there that does the UNLV football games, Caleb Herring, of course, Chris Chapman, producer, Jose Vellante, host of Sudden Death on another station. I don't know why I say that, but also we've got Alan Michaels, I believe, on the phone. He is at LVMS, that stands for the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, for the first ever South Point 400. It is a playoff race. It is NASCAR. It is crazy, and I'll be out there this afternoon. No sleep, but I don't miss NASCAR. And the good thing about going to NASCAR on a Sunday after you've had no sleep is there is no way in hell you're falling asleep at LVMS with those machines whipping around that track at 200 miles an hour. Alan Michaels, it's been a bit, host of On Pit Road. What's going on, my friend?
Good morning, Brian. And, man, I'm watching you on the Facebook, and I'm telling you, it's a rocking and rolling. I've been watching your football. And how about those Ohio State Buckeyes coming back on TCU last night, my friend?
Yeah, pretty crazy. And, yeah, it's amazing. We shouldn't be on Facebook Live. We should be only on radio. I was born with a face for radio. So, I mean, the Facebook Live thing, somebody talked me into that, and I scare a lot of people every Sunday morning.
You're the same way. Well, you know, Brian, it's been a busy weekend. Four big races here. I'll get you started off. The K&N Series was over at the dirt track, the Star Nursery 100. 16-year-old Haley Deegan took the pole, man. But Sheldon Creed come up with the victory there. But Haley Deegan, I'm telling you, she's on the Toyota Racing Development Team. This girl can drive a car. She really can. So Sheldon Creed picked up the victory. Grant Infinger on Friday night won the Camping World Truck Series, man. He picked up, so he's ready to rock and roll. Yesterday it was Ron Chastain winning the inaugural DC 300. He picked up his first victory in 132 starts in the Xfinity Series. And Eric Jones sets the pole today, my friend, as they get ready to battle, beat, and bang here at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway for the first annual South Point Hotel Casino 400.
What's your prediction on today? I mean, this is a big race. It's a big race for Las Vegas. It's exciting that they get this opportunity to host the first round, basically, of the playoffs at NASCAR. Who are you really liking out there, Alan?
Well, I'll tell you what. You can't count out the Busch brothers, either Kyle or Kurt. They're both looking here. They're hometown guys, Brian. You can't count them out. But I'll tell you who really needs to come out of the hole hot. If he's looking for his eighth championship, Jimmy Johnson has got to have a hard, he's got to have a quick hard start today, buddy. He's got to get a victory. He's won most of them out here. He's the winningest driver out here. Jimmy doesn't have a win this year. He got in on points, but I think if the Hendrick Motorsports Lowe's team is looking to get an advancement, they've got to come out of the hole. I mean, they just got to burn them up and be hot today.
Alan, quick question. The fact that Eric Jones won a truck race back in Vegas in 2014, do you think that kind of gives him a bit of an advantage so he knows the track a little bit today?
Well, you know what? You can't count him out. He's, you know, I agree with you. He knows the track. It's going to be under different circumstances. You know, the trucks and the cars are a little bit different, the way that they're set up and aerodynamically and everything else. The track has been hot, but it's been really fast all weekend long. So, yeah, you know what? For that Joe Gibbs team, he could be a pick. But like I said, you got four runners in there with Eric Jones. You've got Denny Hamlin, of course, Kyle Busch up in there, and Daniel Suarez. And we already know that Suarez is out, and Martin Truex Jr. is going to be making a move over to that team next year.
Going to be very interesting today. How has the crowds been out there? Is it pretty much the same atmosphere as the race we'll see in February?
You know what? The crowds have been really good. LVMS has really stepped it up. They've really made it fan favorite. They've actually got almost, it's called Turn It Up and Turn Four, and they've actually brought in almost like there's carnival rides there. There's a swimming pool that you can hang out. So I think it's going to be a good, I heard ticket sales have been pretty good for this show. It's just going to be hot. I mean, we're predicting 100 degrees, the air temperature, track temperature probably about 120 or so, and then you're looking at anywhere from 130 to 140 inside the cars. But fans that are going to come out today, bring lots of water. Drink, 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 hydrate, hydrate, hydrate.
And maybe some earplugs as well. If you've never been out there, it can definitely reverberate in between the ears for a while as well. Alan Michaels, On Pit Road, host. Always appreciate you, my friend. We'll see you out there in a couple hours.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day, and come on out and enjoy some racing, my friends.
Appreciate you. All right, Mags, hit it. Back.
This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
That's a fact. This fight was the best boxing match in 2018, and to me it was worth paying the $85 to sit on my couch with my daughter and watch it. This, I thought, however, was the wrong decision. With Triple G being reigning champ, at best, this fight should have been a draw. I think we all agree on that. When you're the champion, you've got to be soundly beaten to lose. I think everybody wanted Canelo Alvarez to win this fight. I think it sets up Canelo Triple G Part 3, which everyone wanted, and I think that's what made it intriguing. I think it was unfortunate because I thought the most damage that I saw done, and I showed you, Caleb, the scorecard that I had. Jose showed us his scorecard. I thought that Triple G won the fight just like I thought he won the first one. I mean, the guy's been screwed twice, and now, you know what it's doing? It's screwing with his record. Now he's got a draw and a loss on two more fights that should be win, and that is permanent. That's something you can never erase. If that was Floyd Money Mayweather right now that took a loss like that, let me tell you something. He would be paying a Supreme Court judge to change his record, you know, because of the injustice that was done,
it's
and that's a problem.
To Triple G, and I think it does the sport of boxing a disservice as well, because there's always been speculation about how fair or how the judges put these cards in and if it's rigged or not, and this just adds to that. So it's one of those things you just don't know. Is it the sport of boxing that needs to make a change? Because Triple G, obviously I didn't watch the fight, but everybody scored it as Triple G either winning or a close draw. So it's something that really hurts the sport, and you hate to see it. They're kind of trying to set up that third one, like you said, to get some more money out of the deal, but you got to at least call the fights the way everybody sees them, which was Triple G winning.
It's all about money. I mean, when you boil down to it,
that. That's all it is. It's boxing. You and I had this conversation. Boxing is not what it used to be back in the day. Obviously,
it was
you've
always
seen
about
better
money.
Fights than I have, you know, because you saw better boxers in your time. I saw Julio Cesar Chavez, you know, De La Hoya in the early prime when boxing was good. Now it seems like boxing is just corrupt. It's fixed. Triple G didn't even stay in the ring to do the interview for HBO. He was like, I'm out. And he normally doesn't even do that. That just shows you how upset and disgusted he was with the decision.
See, but I watched the fight. I watched it twice, as a matter of fact. It wasn't that lopsided of a decision. Triple G won the fight, yes. But like I said, it was maybe by one round. I mean, it was a very close fight.
I had it a draw.
And I don't want to tarnish it. I mean, I understand Triple G being upset because, like I said, losses affect your payday. They affect your legacy.
Let me ask you.
They affect the future of fights you might get. It's a problem to me. But real quick, Mags, and I just wanted to say that it's not any more corrupt. Boxing has always been the most corrupt of all sports. No question about it. It's always been tarnished. What I think you're saying, Jose, is yes, there used to be many more fighters. You had like the heavyweight. You had at one time 6 or 7 heavyweights competing, and that's what made it intriguing. Now you're just dying to find two people like Canelo and Triple G that can fight and make a headliner like this. It was the best fight of 2017, and it was the best fight of 2018. I won't even talk about the Conor McGregor Mayweather farce. I mean, that was the best fight I've seen in a while. I'm happy I paid the money for it, but again, it's just sad that you just can't have honesty in this sport. It's a drag, man.
Well, here's the thing. I saw the first fight. I didn't see last night. I thought Triple G did win the first fight. I thought that was ridiculous, and the whole situation with Adelaide Bird, with the way she scored that fight. But I didn't see last night, but I'm playing devil's advocate here, but could you see how people scored the fight for Canelo, how two guys scored the fight for Canelo? Or was it that blatantly obvious that Triple G did win 7 rounds, or was it debatable that he won 7 rounds?
Do you want to know why I said Mags and why I've got it where I have him winning the fight and I have a Triple G winning? It was the one round. It was the 10th. He definitely hurt Canelo in the 10th. Hurt him twice. And there's no question about it.
Hurting the guy in one round, all right, so you give the round to him.
No, but I'm saying,
what about the other 11 rounds?
I'm saying the other 11 rounds, there was a time when Triple G looked sluggish, and they were talking about his age. He's 10 years older, and I wasn't disagreeing. But Triple G understands his body. That's the one thing with age comes wisdom. And he understands and knows the reserve tank that exists within inside of him, and it came out in later rounds. And he dominated the last couple rounds, I thought. But the 10th round in particular is the one that decision-making. What fighter is stronger? Who dominated? Nobody dominated. They both got cut. One had one eye, the other had the other. The key was, to me, again, it was that 10th round. The cool thing was seeing Canelo gather himself and be able to come back and not lose it. But if anyone was ever hurt at one point in the fight where I thought somebody could go out, that was it. And that's why I say I lean it towards Triple G. But to answer your question directly, no, I don't think it was that blatant that you could say, wow, like you could Adelaide Bird scored
like
after the first one.
Yeah, the first
fight. Is just like she was watching a different fight. I guarantee she was watching Netflix on her phone during the fight. She had no idea. She's watching Rocky. And like, yes, Canelo.
Well, first I would like to point out how old you sounded when you said with age comes wisdom. Yeah. That's such an old person thing to say.
I am an old man. What do you want me to tell you?
So a second,
you made a joke
I
about
wanna
it?
Go back to the back in
he's
the
still,
day.
He's still salty about stepping in earlier. He's
got
to get it back to me.
I gotta redeem myself.
Sloppy seconds, he's never gonna live down.
It's
so.
it's like one of those deals where back in the day, there was a lot more knockouts back in the day. Yeah. Decisions weren't made that much, so it wasn't up to the judges to kind of, you know, tamper with the way the outcome is. So, but like you said, I haven't watched it, but based on what everybody's saying, there was no definite way you could say Triple G dominated that fight and he should have won. It wasn't a robbery.
No, that's why I said I had it a draw.
So it feels a little better than the first one. So obviously people are going to want a third one. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm sure that's going to happen, obviously.
Oh, it's a lock. But here's what I want to ask you. Any guys, have you seen, when is the last time you saw two fighters stand toe-to-toe for 12 full rounds? Because that's what we saw last night.
It's been a
and
while.
To me, when I paid $85, I had a feeling. I said it. We had a big texting chain going on with a bunch of my friends. We do it all the time. And everyone was liking Canelo in the thing. And I said it's going to be Triple G going the distance, and he'll put on a beating. He didn't put on a beating like I thought he would, but it went the distance like I thought, which is why I wanted to invest the $85 and miss, which really was tough for me to miss the UNLV Prairie View A&M game. And I know Caleb can't believe that I wouldn't go there and watch the fight at home.
I want to see the viewership.
I have a question
numbers.
And a scenario for both of you guys. Mayweather came out and said, supposedly he wants to fight Pacquiao in December, right? I was talking to Mags about this.
Won't watch it.
If, I'm just saying, say for example, he comes back, beats him, takes his belt. Canelo just beat Triple G and took his belt. You know Mayweather loves money. Would Mayweather come back for that fight?
No.
I'm not saying he is. I'm asking what you think.
No, I don't think he would because, one, he's already beat him. Uh-huh. He beat him pretty bad.
Pretty soundly, yes.
When he did beat him. So. I think with Floyd at this point, it's about his legacy. So the money thing is not an issue with Floyd anymore. I think he'll make more money outside, doing something outside of boxing.
And he'll make another $100 million fighting Pacquiao again.
So I don't think he'll ever.
I just wanted to get your thoughts. I'm not saying I like it. I'm just getting your thoughts.
I heard and I saw yesterday that the guy who's going to come out of retirement to fight Canelo is Tommy Hitman Hearns. He was sitting there in the front row. He's ready. Because I'll never forget the most famous quote ever.
So you're going to fight Roy Jones next?
After the fight between
Sugar Ray. Come out with a walker?
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Sugar Ray Robinson from the dead.
Me and out there. Me and Roy Jones, we're going to do a spelling bee together. Because I'll tell you what, that's as close as I'm getting to that. Seriously, does he play tiddlywinks? You're listening to Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio. I'm Brian, and we will be right back.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, Mags, if you have been checking this team out, we are getting ready for preseason Vegas Golden Knights. They've had the rookie games in town, and we got some new faces on this team. And, Chris, I know losing Tomas Tatar, good guy, a friend of yours, more or less, on the team.
Yeah.
And it hurt, and I think he will be a perennial, and he pretty much has been, a 20-goal scorer. He just had to fit in here. But, Mags, I think we got a perennial 30-goal scorer in his place. And the more I look at this trade, I'm thinking the Knights might have gotten the better end of the deal.
What will determine it is how well Tomas Tatar gels in Montreal and what they end up doing with Nick Suzuki. I think the problem is Nick Suzuki is going to be rushed into the NHL by the Canadiens, and I'm not sure he's ready for that. Because if you watched him at all in the rookie games, he had moments where he looked good, but he didn't look NHL-ready good.
He had moments where he looked like a raw rookie.
Yeah. And look, Max Pacioretty, I talked to him last year when the Canadiens came here.
Love that guy.
And he was ranting and raving about Las Vegas. And he really, really likes Coach Gallant. You know, speaks highly of Coach Gallant, not only as a coach, but as a person. And I think we all like Gallant. I mean, Gallant's a good guy. I think the Golden Knights definitely got the better end of that deal. And the idea of Max Pacioretty playing on the wing with Paul Stastny at center.
Oh, man.
You have two 200-foot players, but you also have a guy who can score 30 goals. The third person who ends up being on that line, whether it be Alex Tuch, Eric Halla, maybe someone else emerges out of camp to make the push to be on that third line. Maybe Tomáš or second line, maybe Tomáš Nosek. Who
best
knows?
Second line in hockey, Chris. Best second line in hockey.
I think you make the case that you have two first lines.
Yeah, you do.
With Stastny and Pacioretty. Pacioretty and William Karlsson will be playing today for the Golden Knights. And what's got me excited, Erik Brännström, the Swedish defenseman that they drafted in the first round last year, he is scheduled to be in the lineup today. He wasn't in part of the camp last year. He was playing professionally in Sweden. I'm really excited to see what this guy does because he was incredible at the rookie camp last week. He looked like he could be ready. You know, I heard some guys who really know the game well say of all the players, Nick Hague, he scored the goals. He does some things really well, but Erik Brännström looks to be
more
the guy who's more NHL ready.
Yeah.
Zach Whitecloud, another guy who's going to be fighting for that spot. He is not in the lineup today, I don't believe. But, you know, there are some openings because you've got the 20-game suspension for Schmidt and Shea Theodore still not in camp, no contract, and it doesn't even appear that they're close. So there's going to be a lot of competition for a couple of spots, and even within those spots, the competition between guys like Halla and Tuch to get on that second line, What the GM wants and what the coach want may not necessarily be the same thing. I think Gallant's going to end up making the final call on who will be on that second line. But the addition of Max Pacioretty and Paul Stastny, look, people were upset that they lost James Neal and David Perron. But these two guys, the line's better. Because James Pacioretty and David Perron were good players, but Paul Stastny and Max Pacioretty are better than David Perron and James Neal.
Oh, I'm not going to disagree with that at all. I think it's a great call, and I'll tell you what, you might also be watching in net tonight the heir apparent to Marc-Andre Fleury and Dylan Ferguson.
I think he does get the start.
Yeah, and I think this guy, Mags, I think there's all kinds of upside with him. We've seen it in the past.
I really like Dylan Ferguson, and I think he's going to – I honestly think Dylan Ferguson will be the guy in Chicago. Again, that's another position where there's a lot of competition. Look, we know who the goalie is, and I think we have an idea who the second goalie is. But the two goalies in Chicago, between Dansk, Lagasse, and Ferguson, that's going to be a really good battle.
I think Dylan Ferguson is the next Caleb Herring. He's just on the bench waiting, man. He's right there all ready to make a move and get things going. Listen, this is Out of Line. I'm Brian. I got Caleb Herring in studio today. Appreciate that. You can hear Caleb on all UNLV football games. He says the sidekick for Russ Langer, does the color. And like I said earlier, and I'm not messing around, Caleb absolutely tells it like it is, man. When UNLV is stinking on ice, Caleb is sitting in the broadcast booth with a clothespin on his nose. He doesn't mess around, man. Jose Vellante, of course, host of his new show, Sudden Death, here also. And we've got Mags, Chris Magnum Chapman, of course. You hear him all over Vegas Golden Knights Radio, produces the T.C. Martin Show, and you hear Chris all over Lotus Broadcasting. Right now, quickly transitioning over to the National Football League. Guys, we saw some things last week, and I want to get this in, but the best and the worst of last week. It's funny because it's all summed up me in one game, and I'm not trying to be a homer, and I don't want to spend another show talking about the Detroit Lions, but when one game epitomized to me a team that surprised me on the high end and the low end, the Jets and the Lions. Sam Darnold throws his first NFL pass. It's a pick six, and comes back to play pretty darn well, being the only rookie out of that that highly anticipated class, the only one to get a start in game one, and they win it, and they win it on the road at Ford Field. And transversely, the Detroit Lions on the other side, wow, I have not seen the team look that out of sorts. Nobody had any idea, and it starts with their head coach. The guy was a deer in headlights. Head on backwards, he looked uncomfortable. Looks like he does not have the team. He tries to bring the New England Patriots system over to the Detroit Lions. You know what Matt Patricia forgot? You know what he forgot to bring with him?
Tom Brady and Bill Belichick?
Thank you very much. I'll take just Bill Belichick.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Steinbach.
Tired of when our NFL franchise is going to learn that Bill Belichick and Colin Cowherd, I'm stealing this from you, brother, is as close to a football genius as there is. And geniuses necessarily don't make good mentors. It's that simple. And look at the pedigree. Every guy that leaves him and goes somewhere else is garbage unless they go to college. Because, of course, Nick Saban was a protege of Bill Belichick, and we know what he has done.
We know
what
he did in the NFL, too.
Well, he sucked at Miami. Well,
Belichick's been caught cheating, so I don't know if you can say he's the greatest.
Yeah, let's settle down.
Cheats on his wife. Yeah. You know, cheats on his wife.
Okay, here we go. We go all up. The bottom line is, let me tell you something.
That's legit. I'm not making that up.
I understand that, but here's the bottom line: is if you put you Nick Saban here, okay, and you had Paul
kisses
Bear,
his daughter with
you
the
had,
mouth open,
and you had Paul Bear Bryant here, talked to most Alabama fans, you know what they're going to say when you say Nick Saban? They're going to say Roll Tide, and that's going to be the end of it. I'm sorry, man.
He's got to them, basically.
He 100%.
Your best was the Jets, or Sam Darnold, specifically for the Jets, and your worst
my point is, the Jets surprised me. Who surprised?
The Bucks did surprise me. That was
Ryan Fitzpatrick?
The Bucks didn't surprise me because the team they played was garbage.
What happened to that Fitzmagic?
Okay, the Saints are garbage.
The Saints have the
third worst defense in the National Football League.
I'm just going to rub salt in your wounds, though. A couple years ago, when the Patriots won the Super Bowl, Matt Patricia came off the airplane wearing a shirt with Roger Goodell wearing a red nose.
Yeah.
Well, the real clowns here are the ownership of the Lions falling for that fool's gold. The Ford family falling for that fool's gold, thinking that this guy was an NFL coach.
You know what summed it up was, for me, the look on his face that whole fourth quarter.
You know what he reminded me of? And I said this during the game. And I actually said it to my friend that I was sitting next to at the Buffalo Wild Wings. I said, you know what this reminds me of? He looks like the coach, like Henry Winkler in Waterboy, right before Adam Sandler caught him and said, are you scared of him? And he pictured him as a baby when he was running off the stand. He was like looking to get away. Like, can I go off in the tunnel and disappear?
He looked like a child that was on the cusp of throwing a tantrum at Walmart. He was about to just lose it and just cry.
I want that toy, Mom.
The first coach in NFL history to be fired in your inaugural season in the first year of your contract. Could that happen?
No, I don't think so.
Will they go 0-16 before that?
Before
they would allow that to happen question.
If they play the Browns this year?
If they were 0-16, my point is, say they were 0-14, would they fire him then? They were 0-14? Okay. That's
too much logistics. It's taken away from the best thing that happened in football, though. Us talking about Aaron Rodgers.
I was just asking
a little bit. He's the greatest of all time.
Can anybody
dispute him at this point? I'm not talking about wins and losses because Tom Brady.
Are you talking about the size of his cojones?
No,
because if you're talking about that, I agree.
Strictly talent on the field. Aaron Rodgers is the greatest of all time.
All time.
You know what?
What?
All time. I said it.
No.
Say it again. The greatest of all time.
You are too young. You are too young to remember John Elway and Dan Marino.
Montana. I remember those guys.
I saw those guys. 3 years old. Oh, man.
Aaron Rodgers can do things with a football that no man has ever been able to do.
Well, can I say one thing? Jim Plunkett has more rings than Aaron Rodgers at this point.
Rings don't mean everything.
That doesn't mean it to me.
Robert Horry would be the greatest.
He's got what, 9-10 rings?
We're basing this on rings.
Like I said, I get what Caleb is saying, Mags. He's talking about the skill set, purely the skill set of Aaron Rodgers on a football field.
I think it's debatable.
Am I right? Is that pretty much what you're saying?
Absolutely.
And the mechanics.
Yeah,
winning
has a lot to do with your situation and year to year what
happens. Aaron Rodgers' ability to survey a football field and get done what needs to be done, and I think what Caleb's saying, especially after last game, what we saw on one leg was somewhat miraculous.
Greatest
it really was.
Time.
It was really it was inspirational. And I'll tell you what, I hate both those teams. Obviously, being a Lions fan, I couldn't take my eyes off that game, especially in the second half. Like,
great
wow,
way to start the season.
Aaron Rodgers. And you know what? Chris Collinsworth was saying it on the broadcast. He's like, is this really going to happen to Al Michaels? And they're like,
can they replace
him
soon? Because I'm sorry, I can't stand puts me to sleep at times.
But listen, guys, running low on time. I want to get these games in. What do you guys like? Chris, I'll start with you back there behind the board. Give me your pick of the day. Who do you like?
Well, my game's tomorrow, and I like the Seahawks getting what is it in the paper? 3.5 or 3?
Because that's the line we're going 3.5 right? Right now. All we're right. Going off that. So you can take the Seahawks giving up, or no, getting 3.5 from the Bears.
Look, I just don't have any confidence in Mitchell Trubisky.
I'm not disagreeing.
And you know what? Primetime game, Seahawks show up to play on primetime. I think they win the game outright.
And you know, talking about that game very quickly, man, I want a little kudos here about my call on Khalil Mack. I say all that, and he goes out and has a career game. Definitely not his fault the Packers came back. I'll tell you that right now. You're talking about a guy that has a sack, forces a fumble, intercepts a ball, takes it back. Yeah, set a record in his first game with the Bears. He is
Raider fans
the
everywhere,
best defensive player in the game. Jose, who do you like?
So we talked about this the other day. I'm going to go ahead and give it to you. Patrick Mahomes is the truth. Since we're talking about quarterbacks, this kid is the truth.
I like him.
I like them plus the 4.5 against the Steelers. If not, just take them on the money line. Take the plus 180. That's my pick for this week. I like the Kansas City Chiefs.
See, and it's not just Patrick Mahomes. You talk about the running back and Kareem Hunt. Tariq Hill is one of the most skilled athletes I've ever seen in my life.
He's one of the most explosive players I've ever seen in the NFL.
He is To me, the closest guy I've seen like him, the dynamics, is Barry Sanders.
I think.
I mean, I'm telling you right now, I think that is how dynamic I think he is.
I think he's what a lot of people envisioned Percy Harvin to be if Percy Harvin could have stayed healthy.
He's just got to put jumper.
Okay, Harvin was explosive.
You took my pick.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. You can take it too.
Fine. I won't do that because okay.
Who are you doing?
I want to be by myself.
You want your Rams, right?
Isn't that all by myself? All right, who do you want to be?
Rams would be a good bet. I think that one's too easy. I'm going to take the Falcons over the Panthers. Was it minus 5.5?
Real quick.
Maddie Ice. Listen, we're about out of time. Maddie Ice, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put my money where my mouth was at the beginning. This line looks like crap to me. Why are the Jets only favored by 2.5 points at home? Something stinks. And whenever something stinks, I go the other way. I'm going to take the Miami Dolphins. I'm going to take the 2.5 points.
They're at 3 now, so you're getting 3.
We're going by the paper. It's 2.5, and I'll take it. I'll take it because I think the Miami Dolphins are going to win outright. We're here every Sunday. Out of line, I want to thank Kayla Herring. He'll be back with us again next week. Magnum, producer behind the big board, Jose Valonte. Want to thank Alan Michaels also for calling in from LVMS. We'll get Alan Snell back next week. I'm Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line, 8 to 9 every Sunday morning. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Bye-bye.